Now stay tuned for To Your Health on WPVC LP Charlottesville, the show where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Now here's your host, MC Blair.
Good morning. Hope you can hear me. Can you guys hear me? Awesome. This is MC Blair. Welcome to Your Health. We are going to be talking today with Ethan and Kate Zuckerman of Blue Ridge Bucha. And they've got some great, great products out there. Kombucha is wonderful, wonderful place. But at first, we've got our headlines. That's it. All right. Just wanted to say the first one is the grant money awarded to the Charlottesville Local Food Hub, which is great. You know, they got the conservation fund grants from $5,000 to $10,000, sponsored by CSX, the transportation company. It's to support transporting healthy food. There it is. The goal for the grant program is to help local food organizations fill in the gaps and enhance their ability to provide healthy local food to nearby communities. Katie Allen, Director of Conservation Funds Leadership Network. The Local Food Hub in Charlottesville, their mission is to partner with Virginia farmers to increase community access to local food. And, of course, that's what we talk about a lot here on To Your Health is community-based agriculture and community involvement in that. So providing the community with the local food, it provides the support services, infrastructure, and market opportunities that connect people with food grown close to home. The grant funds will be used to install additional cold storage at the Local Food Hub warehouse. That's really cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. And so I can't hear you too well. Are you?
Are we in?
See? Talk.
Keep on talking.
Talking.
Coming through.
Check sound. Joe, we're in. Hello, hello.
All right. How about you, Kate?
Am I here yet?
All right.
I hear you.
You
good
are.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, that's awesome. Okay, we'll try to get these technical things worked out here. how did you guys get started?
How did we get started? I guess we began I began brewing kombucha in Northern California, where I was going to school, college. Both Kate and I are from the Virginia area, and we both independently went out west and did a variety of things. While I was going to school in Northern California, a housemate brought in one of these SCOBYs, the symbiotic colony of bacteria and yeast, the mother culture used to make kombucha. Mm-hmm. That was, almost 15, 14 years ago, something like that now. So started brewing kombucha back then. Brewing, really enjoyed it, went well. It was in early stages of kombucha really in the country as far as a commercial kind of level. Mm-hmm. And my housemate and I were really into kombucha. And so we started selling shares of kombucha way back then to our professors. Fast forward, moved back across the country, back to Virginia. And kept the hobby up of brewing kombucha. Then there became a kind of a glimmer of, could we turn this into a business? And so that was kind of the beginning of something.
Well, that sounds good. Oh, my goodness gracious. So I guess one of the things that I remember was several years back I was at volleyball out at Shannon Farm. Mm-hmm. And you brought some kombucha down there. It's first actually my introduction to that drink.
Cool.
And that was, I guess you guys were just getting started.
Yeah, and it might have, at that point, it might have still been kind of the home brew. We're brewing this up, friends and family really enjoying and appreciating. Back then, we were building our home in Nelson County. And, I studied applied sustainability, had a lot of emphasis on natural and green building and a lot of different design kind of elements that I was really interested in, and thinking that, my skills are kind of leading towards sort of more of a permaculture, organic agriculture, green building kind of realm. And the housing building industry just sort of kind of took a real downturn, if we all, some of us remember that. And I thought, you know, I'm looking at my mentors in the building world, and many of them are kind of, you know, crouched, their backs are hurting, or their eyes are doing this or that. And, you know, they had a kind of a hard run. I thought, well, this is a great, I'd love to keep doing these kinds of things. I love building and love design. But there's also this nice little passion here, this hobby project that could turn into something. So that might have been around the same time we began our kombucha business, which really started as a share-based model. We called it a community-supported kombucha project.
Oh my.
So we began you know, brewing in 2-gallon glass jars, filling up 6 packs of kombucha. We started actually outside of Moss parking lot in the back of our 93 Honda Civic, you know, handing out 6 packs of kombucha. Still even back then, our ethos was this whole no waste component. So people would bring back their empty bottles. We would, you know, give them a new fresh 6-pack. We'd go over to, we were renting space from Harvest Moon at the time, and we would wash and sanitize all our bottles, go back out to our brewery back then, you know, just basically our workshop garage, and we'd fill the bottles again, you know, send them back out, this weekly share model. So people would sign up for, you know, a 6-pack a week, basically. And we eventually, you know, segued into drop spots in Charlottesville. We had 2 refrigerators. We would drop the kombucha bottles. People would bring their bottles back. But still that whole model of no waste. And so back then, I think we did that for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
How many clients were...
Well, we had about 100 clients that, you know, at the apex of that.
Right, right. And it was going really well. I mean, I think both of us, you know, going to sleep at night would just sort of lay back and hear the clanking bottles in the back of the car as we're going to take them and sanitize them. We thought, for us, the two of us doing this, this didn't feel so sustainable constantly washing these bottles. And so we were thinking, is there another way to do this? Could we do something different that doesn't add to the landfill and kind of empowers, you know, our clientele, basically? You know, there's the person who's bringing in their bags to the grocery store, the person who's now bringing in their kombucha bottles or maybe bringing in their bulk glass bottles. That's the person we were wanting to target and thinking that was our clientele, the people who were interested in doing what we were doing. And so we said, all right, let's see if we can put our kombucha into a keg, which at that point in the kombucha history was kind of a novel idea. We figured it out. We were able to, you know, make that transition. And so then we, you know, talked with one of our local retailers, grocery stores, Rebecca's Natural Foods, and we said, can we put a, you know, a draft system in your establishment here and see if all of our share members would switch to now owning their own bottles? They would bring the bottles in, fill them up, and then they would take the bottles back and wash them and bring them back again. And, you know, we made that switch, and it worked.
It does. That's how I got my, and still do get my kombucha from you guys. And I have my own container.
Awesome.
You know, and I wash it myself.
Awesome.
And then bring it in and get it refilled. And it's just the best way to go. I know, actually... These guys, Clean Canteen,
right?
Exactly the same model.
Yep.
You know, bring
yeah.
it in, and they have a thing where they're what is it? Coffee shops are doing that. Bring in your own, you know, cup.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's a great sustainable model, and it does work. You are correct. I saw that you guys have served or saved over 500,000 bottles from
Amazing.
Going into the landfill.
Yeah, we recently hit that milestone. Was it November, I think?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Over 500,000 bottles saved.
That is great.
Awesome, right?
It is.
Yeah.
And at first I thought it was a typo. I thought it was supposed to be served, and then I went, oh, no, of course not. It's saved. Saved from going in the landfill. That's wonderful. So for the future, you guys are looking to get in solar power brewery?
Yeah.
And you said that's about a year away. Is that correct?
You know, if things go smoothly, you know, about a year from now. Yep. So, you know, this whole time we've been brewing at on a brewery that's right next to our home.
Mm-hmm.
It's very small. It's, you know, 500 square feet, if that. So we've just,
tiny.
There's a lot of us moving around in a small space,
right,
large
right.
fermentation tanks.
Yeah.
So we're we've really outgrown that space. So we're going to be building a nano brewery, essentially right off of 151. And one of our hopes for that is that we'll be able to make it solar powered.
Oh, that'd be great. That would really be good. And you use the, you compost the brewery waste.
We do.
For your gardens.
We do, yeah. And when we move to the new location, part of what we'll be doing will be a farm brewery. So we'll be growing a certain percentage of our own ingredients. So we hope to be able to use the compost to help, you know, with the agriculture that we'll be starting there on that property.
Oh, man. So. Yeah, that's great.
It's kind of like a dream. You know, it's like, how can you grow your own elements of your product, your food, what you're doing, and then incorporate them into the product you're making? And so it's, yeah, we're taking the steps forward in that direction.
Great. In case you just tuned in, we are WPVC. The show is called To Your Health. And we are talking with Kate and Ethan Zuckerman, owners of Blue Ridge Bucha. And they're talking about their kombucha, and this is MC Blair. So what do you guys do to keep it sustainable? You have talked a little bit about that. Is there any other things you're doing to?
Yeah, for us, there's a variety of things. I think one of the most overt and the biggest things that we're doing is the no waste model. This idea of, you know, take ownership essentially for your packaging, for the product that you believe in, and minimize the waste. So the main emphasis here is on, you know, refillable. So the past year we did launch a pre-filled bottle line that puts kombucha in bottles on the shelf alongside other pre-filled bottles, sodas, kombucha, teas. All the messaging on those bottles are essentially refill me. So there's an incentive cost-wise and then an incentive kind of conscience-wise to bring that bottle back and refill it. So along with the draft systems, there are also these pre-filled bottles. So I think that's probably one of the biggest pieces is the no-waste model component. There are others, though.
Yeah, another big one for us is, you know, our aspiration is not to be a national brand. We feel really good about being a strong regional brand. And to us, that means, you know, within a comfortable day's drive. So, you know, currently we are Virginia, D.C., and Maryland. And that feels like a good little area for us. As soon as you start getting further, you start having to compromise, you know, ethically with how far you're delivering.
Yeah, your base principles. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you see, I guess, with a small operation, that 200 miles, 225, whatever that comfortable day's drive is, can support your needs?
Essentially.
Yeah, we've been lucky. The kombucha has been really well received, and so sales have been healthy, and we're also able to employ a good team of people, which is great, and just to keep things steady. And we've just been one foot in front of the other, consistently growing, you know, year over year. So,
what's your website?
BlueRidgeBucha.com.
Okay, good. Yes, I actually went on the website, and it's you got some good looking guy folks there on your team.
We do, really. Yes.
I'll tell you, you guys got to get out there and check that website out. It's really, really well designed, easy to navigate,
cool.
And you can see the you can see their market penetration. You can see their story and everything about it. It's pretty exciting. What is a probiotic?
Right, beneficial bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
Probiotic. The basic.
The basic. and bacteria in your gut, good gut bacteria.
Yeah, yeah. So beyond kombucha, just sort of the idea of probiotics, we are agreeing as a culture that probiotics are beneficial. They're helpful. They're things that we want in our bodies. We are understanding that, you know, probiotics are helpful to our digestive system.
Our immune system.
There are, you know, studies that are linking gut health to brain health. There's a lot of interesting information out there. We are seeing that with a strong, healthy bacteria, probiotic-rich digestive system, that the food, the healthy food we're all looking for and we're eating, that those probiotics are helping our bodies, our systems assimilate the beneficial components of our food and really bringing it into the rest of our body. Yeah, so probiotics, I remember as a kid, you know, if we ever got really hurt or had to go to the hospital and we had to have an antibiotic, I remember my mother was always really advocating, let's get some good yogurt in you, let's get that good sauerkraut, really get the probiotics back in, because antibiotics are amazing when we need them. You know, they can really, really help in a, you know, dire situation, but they're also taking all the bacteria away. So we feel it's nice to bring those back in. And much like a really good yogurt, a really good unpasteurized sauerkraut, kombucha also has these probiotics that can help line the digestive system.
So it's like reinvigorating your gut.
Essentially.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's kind of like reinvigorating the soil if the soil's depleted.
Yeah,
just
absolutely.
Keep it going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a connection there, I think.
I think so.
Healthy gut, healthy soil, healthy bodies, healthy food.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah.
Now, you are certified organic.
Correct.
What does that entail?
Well, I think the USDA label, organic, you know, I looked at it since that came on the shelf as something like, okay, that means something. It was never really clear other than the basic guidelines of what that meant. But going through the process to be USDA certified organic has, I think, really, what would be the word? Just kind of reinstituted this thought that it really means something. Essentially, going through the process has just sort of, I'm at a loss of words for a moment.
Well, I think it's given us respect for what that label means.
Thank you.
And now we really seek that out in many of the purchasing decisions that we make. Obviously, people using organic methods who are growing here locally, we will buy without a certified organic seal. But when we're looking to purchase something from a larger brand, we're looking for the seal knowing, you know, it guarantees that you're not going to have GMOs in your food, which is important to us. Also, we just had our inspection, actually on Monday, our annual inspection. And it's a very rigorous process. So, you know, you're assuring that not only are you doing the best that you can in your methods and ingredient sourcing, but even the people that you source your ingredients from. So when they come to inspect us, they're looking not only at us, but they're looking at all the companies that we work with and ensuring that those companies are following ethical practices in, you know, compliance too, which is not something as a small business that we would really be able to do. We would be, you know, trying to source something and taking someone's word for how they grew it, but we're not going to be able to go to every single farm and figure it out. Well, the organic seal on that product ensures us that those people have gone through the same rigorous standards that we have. So it just gives us a lot of faith in what we're putting out there on the market, that it's, you know, the most healthful, the highest quality. You're not going to get any unintended GMOs or pesticides or anything like that.
I think that's the word. It has really renewed our faith in the USDA label going through the process. Like, oh, that label really means something.
Yes.
Which is very cool.
Well, it does. Absolutely. Well, we're going to take a little break here. You are listening to Your Health. Good morning. We are back listening to Your Health on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Resistance Radio. We just got that with the current political climate. We are resisting here. At WPVC, what's going on? We're talking with Ethan and Kate Zuckerman of Blue Ridge Bucha. Great kombucha, wonderful, wonderful flavors, and we'll talk about that. They also came up with the keg idea, the model to put kegs in the various stores so that you can take your container that you own and clean, and get it refilled, saving tons of bottles, in this case half a million bottles so far, from going into the landfill, which is really important. So you guys have a lot of flavors. I like the ginger, but...
The ginger's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the ginger.
We
well.
Do. We have five flavors that are available year-round
mm-hmm.
now. So ginger is our flagship flavor. We also have the Elderflower Sunrise, which is elderflowers, hibiscus, and rose hips. It's one of our oldest flavors from the days when we were doing a share-based model, and
mm-hmm.
it was really popular with folks back then. We have the Black Raspberry, which is crushed blackberries and raspberries. Delicious, one of our favorites. The Jasmine Grape, so that's a jasmine green tea with a little bit of Concord grape.
Mm.
That's our newest flavor, actually. And then the Bluegrass Bucha, which is... Cascade hops and blueberries. So that was one of our first forays, at least on a larger scale of working with hops. We dry hop that. And so it's a great, you know, crossover for people who are maybe used to drinking beer. There is that little bit of floral aroma from the hops. And so one thing we like about our flavors, we feel like they're really approachable for people. So we make an effort to have it be not just good for you, but really, you know, palatable, something that you want to drink. You're not holding your nose and drinking it because it's good for you. You're drinking it because you like the taste. And so we feel like, you know, one of the things that also is a good thing about our kombucha is that someone who may normally be drinking alcohol or soda, you know, it's a good alternative. It's something to work into your diet that's going to be a little bit more healthful. It's a festive beverage, but, you know, no alcohol and lower sugar than, say, a soda.
We have a couple seasonals that we've been rolling out. Through the winter, we had the kombu chai, which is a nice chai spice.
I saw that.
Yeah, that was, I think fourth year now we've brought that back around the wintertime, and it's kind of small cult following, which is kind of exciting. When it comes out, it doesn't stay out for very long. We do a limited run, and it went really quick. It was great for us and the brewery as well to have that back on draft. It's just such a fun flavor.
And that was the best year ever for that flavor, I think, in terms of, you know, the taste. Like, it's good every year, but one thing that's neat about these batches, because they're produced in limited quantities, is that every year it's going to be a little bit different. Everything we do is handmade and small batch. So this year, when that kombucha came off the racks, we all said, oh my gosh,
this is a good one.
This is the best one ever.
And then the latest flavor that it's on right now is a seasonal flavor, is the golden lavender, which is also coming to a close here shortly. So get your golden lavender. Golden raisins and lavender. It's a really nice flavor.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I will go. Is that also at Rebecca's?
Mm-hmm.
I'm on my way. So how much do you recommend for a serving?
It seems that really it's up to the person. So if someone is starting out introducing probiotics through the form of kombucha into their diet, our recommendation has always been start slow. Just see how it affects your digestive system. There have been certain researchers who have looked at this more closely and have come to determine that, you know, 12 ounces, so 4 ounces three times a day, would be a basic medium place. So, you know, one 12-ounce bottle a day. We found that some people, you know, want to drink more than that. We live right next to a kombucha brewery. That's ours. And so we drink, you know, significantly more than that in a day. And now we're both of us over a decade of drinking like that. But for other people, you know, maybe just a 4 ounce, you know, the day in the morning or after a meal, or it really is something that can kind of prime the digestive system. So, aperitif, as the French would say, before a meal, or a digestif after a meal, to really get that digestive system going. At the same time, in the hot, warmer months, it's a very refreshing beverage. So there are people who happily drink several bottles a day and have found that it just feels great in their body.
That's really great. So it doesn't just, like, wipe everything out, just, you know what I mean?
Right, no.
It's not a laxative.
Right, no, but at the same time, it has a regulating quality. So, you know, it could speed your system up or slow your system down, even, depending on where your digestive system is at the moment. Yeah, it's very interesting how it regulates in that form.
I know, I could drink it all day. It's very refreshing.
Awesome.
Just really good. Now, you guys have over 50 locations now in the Mid-Atlantic region?
Yeah, I think we're right around 50. Mm-hmm.
That is great. Now, where can people buy it here in the local area?
Yeah, so there's several spots. Rebecca's Natural Food over on Barracks Road. Integral Yoga Natural Food on Preston Avenue. Also, Whole Foods Market. There's a few restaurants, too, that have us on draft. So, for example, Fry Spring Station, Blue Mountain Brewery. You can get us at Devil's Backbone Brewery. Also, Hardywood Park recently opened up in Charlottesville. Great spot if you haven't been yet. They have us on draft, too.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So, do you have, you're in Waynesboro, too, right? I saw you in Waynesboro and, you know, for people out in the county. And then in Nelson, like you said, Devil's Backbone.
And also Blue Mountain,
And Blue Mountain.
Basic necessities.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's right there. That's out in Nellie's Ford, Basic Necessities. That's a fun place to go.
Oh, it's
great. I enjoy that.
Great dinner, great lunch, your basic necessities.
And so your definition of local is easy day's drive, I guess. That's it, right?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. My gosh, that's really great. Well, is there anything else? I mean, you're so passionate about this. And do you see... Do you see it going other than the solar and stuff? Do you see it maybe expanding in flavors? Or, I mean,
yes, guys, sort of the limit. I mean, I think there's many things that we appreciate about kombucha, about, you know, essentially creating our own existence through a business that, you know, both Kate and I have been putting a lot of energy into. You know, it really, in one's endeavors, in our case, it right now, a kombucha business, you know, it almost could be anything. We've really loved the product that we're making, and I think one of the things that we also really appreciate about having this opportunity is creating a business and creating a culture around our business. We really are putting a lot of emphasis on you know, the culture of our team. You know, so we're coming together. You know, we're brewing this product, and we're really trying to create essentially a right livelihood where we're paying all of our employees a good wage to be working. We're heading in a direction of, you know, health benefits for our whole team, dental benefits. We incentivize things like bike riding to work and, you know, kind of monetarily incentivize that. We do team lunches and a variety of things to really create a really good work environment. And the idea being that that will, you know, kind of infuse into our product with folks that are happy to be where we are. And then also that just infuses and exudes into the greater community, you know, loving being at the Nellie's Ford Farmers Market, the Mead Market in Charlottesville, you know, having these kind of direct connections with the folks who are drinking our kombucha. We love the festivals environments, you know, being at the Festi or Lock-In and having these great connections with folks who are, you know, really genuinely happy that we're doing what we're doing, which it always feels so good. You know, you're at a festival and you say, here's this great, here's our ginger, do you want to drink this? And like, I've been drinking your ginger for 5 years and love it, you know, and that just feels really good. And so for us, you know, we really enjoy what we do. We want to keep doing it. I feel like the expansion of, you know, ideas or flavors is all there. You know, our latest upcoming project will be this construction of a new farm brewery where we will be, you know, growing a lot of the fruits that will be infused, the herbs that will be infused into our kombucha, and then the opportunity to kind of, well, for me to look back at this, you know, sort of sustainable design background and how can we, you know, create a brewery, a physical space that not only is very efficient for making the product that we make and is, you know, a nice place to be in with light coming in, a lot of natural light, but also that can, you know, really be kind of a net zero spot as far as energy consumption, as far as water consumption, really looking at utilizing the space where we'll be, taking advantage of the natural resources that are there and using them in a really effective, efficient manner. We're excited about that.
And this is, folks, fits right in with community-based agriculture, which we've been, you know, saying here on To Your Health for a very long time. I think it's the key to a local, sustainable food system.
You know,
food justice, right? Safety, food safety. So I was doing a little history reading, and I saw where kombucha first was around 200 BC, and Manchurian mushroom, they called it. Why mushroom? Why did they use that word? The SCOBY, the culture's not a fungus, right?
Correct. Yeah, the SCOBY, research has shown it's more similar to lichen, so kind of a bacteria yeast combo that makes you know this gelatinous mass essentially. You know, probably it has this sort of portobello mushroom top look, but research has shown us that it's not fungal, like you're noting. It's more of a yeast bacteria. And yeah, origin myths are really interesting about kombucha. There's not really a clear where did kombucha come from.
Right.
It's kind of Eastern Eurasia, China, Russia area. One story that I remember is there's a sick Chinese doctor, a sick Chinese emperor, I think the Qin dynasty, so right in the realm.
Qin dynasty,
yeah,
exactly.
So, you know, over almost 3,000 years ago now, there is a Korean doctor, his name is Kombu, maybe Dr. Kombu. he serves the Chinese emperor his cha, his tea. So in China, cha is tea. So, you know, the myth goes that, you know, this heals the ailing emperor, and he's now healthy and abound since then. And so what cures him, essentially, is Kombu's cha. So now we have this kombucha that, you know, started gets kind of goes from the elite or the masses, or maybe it was already with the masses prior, but that's one of the origin myths, which I think
is
interesting. Yeah.
So it's fermented black or green tea, basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now I saw where they called it a functional beverage, and of course we have been talking about that as far as the digestive, and the probiotic, and that's it performs a function, right?
Yeah. So that, you know, that's kind of a technical term in the beverage industry for something that you drink not just because it tastes good and is refreshing, but there's some other reason, usually health-related, to be drinking it. So kombucha falls into that category.
How do you make it?
Good question, right? Essentially, you start by making a very sweet tea. So kombucha, any derivative of the green tea plant, the Camellia sinensis, so it could be a green tea, it could be a black tea, an oolong, a pu'er. So you're boiling water. You're dissolving sugar. Kombucha, the kombucha SCOBY loves sugar. So you're dissolving sugar, and then you're steeping tea. If you taste it at that point, it's sweeter than you or any of us would really want to drink. It's a very sweet tea. But essentially what you're doing is you're making the food for these bacteria to feed off of, to create the probiotics, the acetic acid that we're all going for. So you've made this really sweet tea. you take a little bit of the kombucha from the previous batch. So if you were making yogurt or sourdough, you essentially would take a little bit of that yogurt or a little bit of that sourdough starter to kind of jump kick your new batch. And so that's what you're doing with kombucha. You're taking a little bit of the starter, putting that into your sweet tea, and then this SCOBY, the symbiotic colony of bacteria and yeast, this mother culture, you're taking that from the previous batch and laying that on top of your current batch, and you're covering it with some kind of a breathable cloth that is keeping dust and potentially fruit flies if they're there out, but allowing air to come in. So you have this, there's two main stages. This is the first stage, this aerobic, open to the air stage of brewing kombucha, where the SCOBY is fermenting the sugars, the tannins and the caffeine, the tannins in the tea, caffeine that was in the tea, and you're going from what was something very sweet, you could go all the way to a table vinegar, something that, you know, could really be used as a great vinegar on your table. And then right in there is sort of the art and science. You could look at levels of pH, you can really use your palate. We look at both of these things, alcohol contents, a variety of things, but, you know, this is sort of the art and the science. And so the art then is for where you harvesting that first stage. For us, we leave it with a tiny bit of sweet, where the tang begins to happen, and right there we go from first stage into second stage. So second stage, then the anaerobic stage, where you essentially, if you're going into a bottle, you're capping the bottle, and you're letting it go through a second stage process where it's naturally creating its effervescence. So you're getting this nice effervescent kombucha. You have the opportunity of flavoring in the first stage, flavoring in the second stage. They both have different attributes to what can happen to the product at that point. But that's the essential way of making kombucha.
Is it living?
It is raw, alive.
It is living. So when you buy that bottle, mm-hmm. out of the keg, it's still alive like wine, basically.
It is
still living.
Yeah, and it's an environment that, you know, the alive bacteria, mm-hmm, acetic mm-hmm, acids. Mm-hmm. It is completely raw. We don't do any heat treatment. There's no pasteurization that takes place. For that reason, it needs to be kept refrigerated. So you keep the kombucha refrigerated.
Now, I saw, how long do you recommend keeping it?
Yeah, so right now we have a six-month shelf life.
Uh-huh.
So essentially, you know, you'll look at your Best Buy label and you'll have 6 months basically to consume that kombucha. I'm putting in the fridge. We say once you open the bottle, really within the week, you're wanting to drink it, and it's not so much because it's going to go bad, but the more times you open it, you are releasing the effervescence that's in there. So unlike wine, you're putting on the table, letting it breathe. Kombucha, you know, you kind of want to close the cap.
Right.
Right? Keep those nice effervescence in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, well, I know the refillable bottles that I have actually has the bale.
Yep, that's
winged
up.
And the cork. It's really, really efficient.
Yeah.
You know, really nice. That ceramic with the...
We'll stop.
Gasket. Yeah, yep. Right. Exactly. Well, we're talking with Kate and Ethan Zuckerman of Blue Ridge Bucha. Kombucha. They're great. I saw where it started in Eastern Russia, it came to Eastern Russia around 1900, 1913. It was mentioned in German literature. So I could see where it sort of came right across, like you said, the Eurasia, the Asia, and all that sort of thing, and just moved across into Europe, and then, of course, from there it was brought over to the United States, just like everything else
right.
was brought over to the United States, what they did there. And you guys have been great. This has been absolutely great talking to you, and I've learned a lot, and awesome. I hope our listeners have too.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, thank you very much for
You're
having
welcome.
Us on. It's been great.
Outstanding. You are listening to Your Health here on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, Resistance Radio, right here in Charlottesville. So thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah.
They have to get and pick up children.
Off to Fry Spring Station, have a kombucha, a nice little lunch with the kids.
And yeah. I wanted to do a shout out to Carpe Donut Cafe, Carpe Cafe at the Ix Park. They have the Blue Ridge Bunch, and they'll be there till 3 p.m. today. As a matter of fact, they're having a great time over there. You know Matt, right?
Yeah, they will actually have Blue Ridge Bucha on draft.
Oh, okay.
So head on down. If you've been to a previous Festi and you have your Festi cup and take it down with you, they will give you a free fill of kombucha. So no reason not to go over. It's going to be a great event.
That is great.
That
sounds like fun. Maybe I'll stop by after the show. Well, thanks again, guys. We're going to go into a couple breaks and we'll be back.
All right. Thank you.
So we were talking with Kate and Ethan Zuckerman of Blue Ridge Bucha out there in Nelson County. Really good stuff, kombucha. It can be obtained in several areas in the area. Rebecca's, IY, and others. You know, Vertical Farm wants to pioneer post-organic food. You know, all farmers used to practice organic farming, although they didn't call it organic. They just grew everything without chemical fertilizers or herbicides or pesticides because those things didn't exist. They protected their plants with snails, worms, ladybugs, and homeopathic concoctions passed down from their ancestors. Biodynamic is very similar to that. They will take cow manure, bury it in a cow's horn for over a year. Then they will dimetize it, which is stirring a small amount into a 34, 36 liters of water. And then they will spray it over their crops. And what this does is it revitalizes the soil. And so the goodness of the soil comes up through the plants that are grown there, the animals that are grown on that soil. And so when you consume them, you get those nutrients. Pretty cool. Now, most states have regulations and long lists that define organic, but with biodynamic, it's already organic. It's actually beyond organic. But both the pesticides and herbicides that are used in conventional farming are linked to the declining bee populations. And they still rely on concentrated non-chemical fungicides and pesticides for their large-scale operations. So those non-chemical fungicides and pesticides are generally much, much better. And that's why they can be used and still be called organic. They have warehouse-based vertical farming. Now, that's not entirely new. The farmers have been dabbling in various versions of indoor farming for centuries. They find new ways to capitalize on its water-saving techniques. And in doing that, they find faster ways to ensure quality production. Now, this company, Bowery Farming, uses its own self-automated technology to respond and manipulate the environmental factors on which the plants rely. Now, we had Alexander Olison as a guest a few weeks back, and he has a proprietary system on a small single-family scale, the Sustainability Initiative over there at UVA. Unlike most full-scale indoor farming operations, the Bowery Farmer system uses it senses when it's time to pluck the crop, something that's usually done by sight and schedule in conventional farms. But because he does this method, there's less waste and more predictable harvesting seasons. It also means more predictable bottom line. This company sells to several restaurants and grocery stores in the New York, New Jersey area. Now, we can do that here. We actually can. That's one of the ways that we can help own our own food system and have food security, which will, of course, give access to real food for underprivileged people as well. And there's increasing concerns about drought and climate change. The vertical farms can operate in a limited space with less water and virtually no natural sun. Could be the next stage in agriculture. Now, whether this concept becomes more widespread or not remains to be seen, but there's something to be said for an industry that uses 95% less water and won't wither with climate change. Pretty cool stuff. Now, here's something that I found. Actually, my wife found. Thank you, Marcia. Hungry spiders are eating a prolific amount of pests. Now, the next time you see a spider crawling around your house, look at the bright side. It's probably feasting on a bunch of other insects and providing you with a pest-free environment and giving you free pest control. So, you know, if you've ever called the pest control folks into your house or your business, you know, that can be expensive, and there are green pest control methods, but spiders are the best. Now, if it's a black widow or a brown recluse, I probably wouldn't want either of those in my house. But other than that, you can let them roam. They're fine. A new study released on Tuesday said that spiders eat an estimated 400 to 800 million tons of insects every year. For comparison, the entire human population consumes about 400 million tons of meat and fish every year. So spiders are eating more than we are. Now, whales eat up to 500 million tons annually. So spiders, en masse, are eating up to 800 million tons of insects every year. That's a lot. They are the natural pest control without poisons. And they're also, this I didn't know, the natural predator against wasps. Kind of neat. You're listening to Your Health here on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, 94.7, Resistance Radio. The main principle of biodynamic farming is that the entire farm exists as a single entity without the need for outside inputs. In other words, where an organic farm may produce organic seeds or organic feed for livestock, a biodynamic farm has to produce everything on the premises. Now, that's, I know that Blue Ridge Bucha is certified organic, but after talking to Ethan and Kate, I see they're really more biodynamic. They go beyond organic because what the flavors they use, the, you know, the herbs and spices that they use are right here produced locally, and their gardens are going to in the future produce more and more of everything they use in their product. So that's really, really cool. Are you worried about triglycerides in your body? They're a type of blood and body fat, and they come from foods that you eat or are released from your liver to meet short-term energy needs. When we eat too many fatty foods, the excess triglycerides are stored as body fat. Hello? Extra unwanted pounds leading to a variety of ailments. And refined sugar is the number one culprit. You have to minimize your consumption of foods like candy, ice cream, flavored sweetened yogurt, sweetened juices, and other drinks, cereals, honeys, molasses, jams, jellies, and canned fruit. Drink some kombucha. It's got such a low sugar content, it's ridiculous. It's really good for you. And it's not refined. Now, fresh fruit is incredibly fulfilling. Most people will feel satisfied after one large apple, which only contains 23 grams of sugar, and 13 of those are fructose. Compare that to a 16-ounce bottle of Coke, which contains 52 grams of sugar. 30 of those are fructose. That's according to self-nutrition data. Eat the above foods in extreme moderation and only those made locally with unrefined ingredients. Or, if you must have them, look for products with unrefined ingredients. Now, high alcohol intake causes the liver to increase triglyceride production as well. So, moderation is the key, and red wine is the answer. To lower triglycerides, eat foods high in omega-3s like grass-fed beef, salmon, walnuts, flax seeds. Many other ways to lower your triglycerides. Do your own research, guys. Regardless of what you hear on this show. And now it's time for the two-minute drill. We're going to end a little bit early today. And this is something that is near and dear to my heart. These are uncertain and questionable times. As a country, we're overweight, undereducated, and sick. Our factory food system is corrupted and, quite frankly, not acceptable to promote wellness. The administration has, at best, a loose cannon at the helm. Here at To Your Health, we refuse to put our heads in the sand, allowing corporations and power-hungry billionaires to determine our diets. The optimal way to achieve this goal is to begin at the local level. Now is the time to utilize our community resources to educate and provide access to a local, healthy food system. Our children and everyone else will greatly benefit as well. And let's face it, that's a win-win. Past two-minute drills have talked about this, but we must dedicate ourselves to solving this immediate, clear, and present danger. Our mayor and other city government in officials, including the city's schoolyard garden program, UVA Food Summit, and many others, are in tune with the need for food justice here in Charlottesville. We've had previous guests telling us that this practice is being used on a limited basis. One solution suggested, in order for the entire city to achieve this lofty goal, there must be a commitment from the city fathers to help fund and man a core workforce supplemented by volunteers from the community at large. Another solution could be an endorsement from the city, which would make it easier to get grants and private funding. Whatever we choose, we must do it soon or run the risk of somehow being overrun by big ag, big dairy, and big pharma. Again, I want to thank Ethan and Kate Zuckerman from Blue Ridge Bucha. This is MC Blair saying thanks for listening. And remember, real food and drink, plus exercise and community involvement are key to your health.
You've been listening to To Your Health with your host, MC Blair. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Be listening again next Saturday at 11 for To Your Health. The show is produced by Ben Chambers, production assistance from Mike Friend.